this is Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions.
Colossal Obsessions.
And with us is a very brave man who, it's the Southern black jazz singer, Ray Bone.
Wait, he's a jazz singer now? He was a blues singer.
Well, yes. I'm talking about the T. Neil Diamond. Jazz singer.
Oh,
yes. with Laurence Olivier going, I have no son.
Very good.
And anyway, he came out. It took a lot of courage to come out and say this, that he's suffering from Munchausen syndrome by proxy. And
I love that movie. Yes. My favorite Coen brothers.
And he's, up until now, it's because that's, I think one out of every two people in the public has Munchausen.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh.
And now they announce it may be a lot more than that.
It's underpublicized.
Yes, yes.
For something that's such an epidemic.
Munchausen.
If it's all right with you, next week I'd like to bring my proxy.
Your proxy.
Yeah, I'd like to.
And I think Bono is doing a concert.
Really?
Yes.
That's right.
Good old Bono.
Concert for Munchausen.
Who cares about his fans?
Now, here's something from the Dracula one we did.
Okay. We did worse Dracula movies, in case you weren't listening last week.
Now, although Lon Chaney Jr. was miscast as Dracula, the movie wasn't terrible.
Not terrible, but not good.
No, not really good, but it has parts that are okay. Mm-hmm. And
it was the it was the first on-screen transformation.
Yes,
into a bat.
And so it's a passable one.
Mm-hmm.
Some say even kind of good.
Okay.
And Dracula's daughter.
I got shit for that one online.
Yeah,
People said Dracula's daughter is good because it's got the lesbian scene.
Yes. Yeah, that was the first thing I said when you mentioned. See, perverts like me and the rest of the guys out there know about good lesbian scenes in horror.
Yep. In fact, it was proxy by Munchausen or whatever his name is. Paul Raybone, who brought that up.
Well, I'm the one who brought it up first because I know it had a lesbian scene.
Yeah, so we apologize.
That's what I love about that.
We apologize to the fans, Chris Clues, if you're listening, and the fans of Dracula's daughter.
Because it's that
John
scene where she's painting, she needs a girl model. And she's painting her, and it turns very lesbian.
Okay.
It could be more or less lesbian.
Moderately lesbian.
Very lesbian.
Now,
extremely lesbian. Mucho lesbianos.
Now, which is I watched that on the Spanish channel.
Yeah.
Mucho lesbianos. The music.
This one's off the rails at the 3-minute mark.
Now, should we mention a passing?
Yes, who passed? Oh, well, we should do. We're going to do a whole episode.
We'll do a separate. About
our friend James Karen.
Yes.
Yeah, we know James and love him too much to try to squeeze him into 2 or 3 minutes here. But
we wanted to squeeze him into Mucho Lesbiano.
He would have. He might have appreciated that.
Yes.
We will.
He would have died a lot happier.
We will do a future episode soon, a proper tribute and send off to the great, wonderful James Karen. But
So that was wrong. Dracula's daughter.
Yeah,
because it's a respected weird.
Okay,
cult
so
film.
Let's see which ones you have issue with this week.
And Son of Dracula, not a classic, but perfectly watchable.
Just Chaney miscast.
Yes,
as the count.
So since we're threatening to take up the whole episode with this introduction.
Yeah,
I have more introductory material I would like to introduce.
Hit me.
Because we like to keep the podcast on
I'd
a strict
like
scientific basis.
Yeah.
As we know.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a researcher looked since 1850. There have been 56 case descriptions of people who believed they were metamorphosizing into an animal. 13 met the criteria for clinical lycanthropy.
Wow.
the Excellent. Understanding that
that's
they
what
are
you'll
turning
have next
into
week.
The, that's yes, and you can get that in some of our best offerings, the clinical lycanthropy.
Next
box.
Week, he'll open yeah. the show by saying yeah. you have clinical lycanthropy.
Yeah, yeah <that's> right. I made a mistake. You're saying
you shouldn't have brought it up, but I appreciate that you took a scientific approach.
I like
to the
try to get us and, back on the rails.
Yeah. And the one who discovered that was Dr. Lon Chaney Jr. Yes,
yes. Was, Paul, yeah, Paul right. as a scientist, Paul's bringing a scientific perspective to the show. You have to appreciate that. Thank you, Paul.
I thank you. I like my work to be noticed. That really means a lot to me.
You're in the wrong place.
Yes. Professor Lawrence Talbot discovered right. clinical lycanthropy.
I promised Gilbert last yes. week that we would do, even though by the time this you're listening to this episode, Halloween month has come and gone, but we have one holdover because we did bad Frankenstein movies. Gilbert got very, very excited. I haven't
Frankenstein. Yeah,
I haven't seen you that excited since Muchos Lesbianos debuted.
And I had seen and was familiar with every one of those awful Frankenstein
scarily
movies.
Enough, including the one starring James Caan.
Yeah, especially.
And then we did bad Dracula movies, and you were active and animated, not as much. But this week, I promised you bad werewolf movies. So Ray Bone and I did some digging, and this is what we came up with.
I don't know if I'll be, because I'm a strict Chaney Jr. fan.
Well, what if I started out with one that starred George Zucco?
Oh, my God.
And had Glenn Strange in it.
Wait. Was that Mad Monster?
You bet.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
He's amazing, isn't he?
Yes.
From 1942.
And as always, and they even used it in this next to last, the first of the Jurassic World pictures. They have, what's his name with the long name? He's always the villain. I think it's an Italian name, which explains why he does bad
Wait a
things.
Minute. In the first Jurassic Park?
No. The first Jurassic World.
Oh, which I didn't see.
Vincent D'Onofrio. Yeah, D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
He, when I saw him in that, all I could think is, well, this guy's been hanging out with George Zucco. He says, we can train these velociraptors and they'll fight wars for us.
Famous last words.
And so, yeah, in Mad Monster is like Glenn Strange doing a combination of the Wolfman.
That's right.
And of Mice and Men.
He plays Petro.
Yes.
Or Petro.
And it's also of Mice and Men because he's walking around when he's Pedro. He's like, well, okay, doctor.
It's both a Wolfman and a Mice and Men homage?
Yes.
How disturbing.
There's one part in the movie I love. Glenn Strange is, the guy was about 8 feet tall
sure.
in real life. And really big, bulky guy. And he, George Zucco sends him to kill someone in the room. So he tiptoes up behind him like you wouldn't hear. It would be like Frankenstein tiptoeing.
Right. Up.
He tipped. So, yeah, that one I like.
You're actually going to defend this one, okay?
I'll defend. No, I mean, it's a piece of shit. But
don't get me wrong.
It's a likable one.
It's an enjoyable piece of shit.
It took 5 days to film this masterwork.
That sounds like one-shot Bodine.
It was actually Sam Newfield.
I have one trivia piece with this.
Go.
In a few years earlier, George Zucco was in 1939, The Cat and the Canary.
Yes.
Starring with what mesmerizing woman?
Oh,
Paulette Goddard?
Paulette Goddard.
Oh, geez.
And the reason she was in The Cat and the Canary is that she had tried out in 1939 for another film and lost to Vivian Leigh, and that film was Gone with
yes,
the Wind.
Yes, of course. So.
And I don't know if I said this, George Zucco, actually late in life, his wife drove him to the office or maybe the apartment of Ed Wood. And he wanted it. They wanted to see if Ed Wood was making a movie that he could put George Zucco
into. Wow, that's heartbreaking.
That's horrible.
I think you may have mentioned that in our George Zucco episode, but it's no less sad to hear it a second time.
And then some producer and George Zucco's agent, when George Zucco was too sick to do anything, he called a producer and said, can you just call him and say you're offering him a job in a movie?
Wow.
He'll say no, but it'll make him feel better that people remember him.
Wow. Sounds like Sunset Boulevard.
It's very it's heartbreaking. Yeah. Here's a last piece of trivia before we move on.
And I heard he was trained to perform Cunnilingus on Rich Women, George.
Nice callback.
Yes. Because chimps back then were trained to perform cunnilingus on Rich Hollywood.
As previously established.
True throughout the industry.
Gotta be true. According to British film historian Phil Hardy, this film, Man-Made Monster, shocked the British censor enough to ban it until 1952.
Yes. Oh, wait. I think
Mad Monster.
That the English censor, they put out a warning on the film that in real life doctors are not using animal blood.
Yeah, it says then they had to insist that it should be accompanied by a disclaimer on the matter of blood transfusion.
Yes.
Is he amazing?
That's incredible. Dr. Gottfried.
Amazing. Okay, Gil.
They should have added to that if you were that fucking stupid that you think doctors would actually use animal blood.
What if I told you Columbia, a year later in 1943, not the studio, released a vampire picture with Lugosi that also contained a werewolf?
Oh, wait. That was something of the vampire.
Yes. It also starred Nina Foch or Nina Fock. Or Nina Folk. I never knew how she said her name.
Yeah.
F-O-C-H.
Wait.
He played Armin.
Return of the Vampire?
Yeah, he played Armin Tesla.
Yes.
Very good.
And it was Dracula.
Yes.
But
he couldn't call it Dracula. Yeah. Because it wasn't made by Universal.
And they had a guy who was supposed to be the Wolfman, but wasn't the Wolfman, with a guy who kind of acted like Lon Chaney, but wasn't Lon Chaney.
So the whole thing's a knockoff.
The Armin, I kept trying to say Armin Tesla backwards or something because it sounds like Alucard.
Armin Tesla.
Like it should be some kind of.
Where did they come up with Armin Tesla?
But here was another trivia piece. Bela Lugosi was paid $3,500 for 4 weeks of filming.
A lot of money back then.
And now check this. You guys have to fact check this. Wikipedia says this was the last time he would receive top billing from a major studio.
Ooh.
In 43.
43. Does that sound right?
Yeah, well, it's 12 years after, good 12 years after Dracula. Yeah.
And, but they do have a scene where when he's got the stake in his heart or the sunlight, where you see his face melting away. So that's good. And I think they have a werewolf transformation scene.
There must be. I have never seen this.
It wasn't terrible. Was another case. Wasn't great. But, you know, wasn't that good even, but wasn't terrible.
That was very precisely articulated.
What a race.
Yes.
Return of the Vampire. Why do they call him Armin Tesla?
Because he invented the radio in it. And the werewolf's name was Marconi.
I'm determined to stump you with one of these. You're very good on the Lugosi.
He was Italian, Marconi.
Yes.
Very, very good on. You can't stump him on anything with Glenn Strange or Chaney. Maybe I get him on this one, Paul. This is from 19.
And you know, Glenn Strange. I think it was Bob Burns who went to Glenn Strange.
Oh yeah, they were tight.
Yeah, and he said, you know, Chaney Jr. died. Nobody wants to talk about him. And so Glenn Strange got out of bed, went to a station, talked about him, and they said a few days later he was dead.
Yep, it was a great story.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bob was very close to Glenn Strange.
Yeah, he saw him as a father.
Do we stump you with this one? From 1961, Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory.
Yes, that was a... Was that a Guinea production, I think?
Very good.
Italian horror film.
See?
Directed by Paolo Huish.
Right, except that the producers insisted that he go under the name Richard Benson, because
yes.
we will not have an Italian direct a film in this studio.
But shot at Cinetita.
There you go. Shot in Italy. And grossed 115 million Italian lira.
And, how about that?
And I think
what does that come out to?
I don't know. It was one of those they could appeal to guys in the audience, not just with a monster, but with pretty girls, and dormitory sounds really hot.
The American version of the film added the rock song The Ghoul in School to the opening credits.
So I'm not going to say this is, I'm not going to defend this.
Werewolf in a girl's dormitory.
And I'm not sure if I ever saw it or just saw stills in famous
monsters. Oh, you
monsters.
Saw it. I'm sure you saw it.
I'm sure I did.
The German actor Kurt Lowens plays the werewolf.
Oh, geez.
In the film. Does that mean anything
to
you?
Yeah, he's good.
He's good.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. He wouldn't be hung for war crimes. He was punished by starring in this.
I see. It was this or the Nuremberg trials.
Yes.
What about this one?
And in the middle of filming, he said, "Is it too late to get on the Nuremberg trial?" We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What if I told you I had a Lon Chaney Jr. one for you?
Oh, excellent. Oh, this is probably the Mexican one.
Very good. What's the title?
Was it Castle of Horror?
No.
Or Castle of Terror?
You are so close. Paul, should we help him out?
Yeah, I don't have this one. So
La
you get
Casa del Terror, but it was released under the title The Face of the Screaming Werewolf.
And I remember, what I remember best about this movie, there's a transformation scene.
Yep.
That's, you know, a good transformation.
It's a mummified werewolf in this
but one. It's like, and it's probably because, you know, Chaney was older now, and his drinking was certainly...
he passed not long after this, right? This is 65.
So he was already, you know, years of alcohol. Because I remember seeing the werewolf, when he turns into the werewolf, I go, wow, he's got a big nose.
Well, what actually happened is an American filmmaker, a low-budget filmmaker named Jerry Warren, combined parts of two unrelated Mexican horror films, which they did in those days. La Momia Azteca, I assume means the Aztec mummy, and your guess, La Casa del Terror.
You know something? He appears as the mummy. I think they open up the coffin, or what do they call that?
The sarcophagus.
It's a sarcophagus, which Raybone is suffering. Advanced sarcophagus. And he's the mummy, but he's got his face is like melting and blob.
It sounds right.
And
that's where the face of the screaming werewolf comes
yes.
from.
And then they unwrap him, and I guess he was a mummified werewolf.
Would you like to know the actual plot?
Okay.
A psychic woman named Ann Taylor regresses to a former life through hypnosis. She leads archaeologists into a pyramid where they discover a tomb of two mummies, one who turns out to be a mummified Caucasian werewolf.
That was a classic book, A Tale of Two Mummies.
Yeah, but Dorothy Has Two Mummies.
Yes.
I think it was. From a few years ago. Very progressive. The other was a mummified ancient Aztec warrior.
Okay.
And a mad doctor, played by Yerve Beirut, kidnaps the mummy slash werewolf to his lab and manages to revive him when the unwrapped creature transforms into a snarling werewolf. Oh, my God.
Yes.
But you knew it. That's what's amazing. I just said Lon Chaney Jr. He knew it was Mexican.
Yes.
Right.
Based on a true story.
He was close.
Based on a true story. What did you find, Paul, on the face of the screaming werewolf?
I didn't find much, but I was interested to move on to another one here.
Uh-huh.
If you want to go to...
We may have jumped over that one.
Well, how about the one with Michael Landon?
Yeah, Gil, what's your
teenage,
take?
Teenage
I was a teenage werewolf.
I was a teenage werewolf.
Well, it's...
Made by Samuel Arkoff.
Oh, yes.
AIP, yeah.
And certainly I'm a fan of Arkoff, mm-hmm. so I got to give it extra points.
Me too.
And Landon, I like. So it's one of those movies that, no, it's not good.
The transformation scenes aren't bad.
Yeah.
I watched some clips of it today.
Yeah, so those are good.
And it made Landon. It made his career.
Yes.
He got Bonanza a couple of years later. Yeah. What'd you find on that?
I've got PR? I've run down the budget again.
Okay.
On this one, a budget of $82,000, and it grossed $2 million.
Made money.
So that's not bad.
It's a profitable movie. And
would you invest $82,000 to make $2
million? Absolutely. And it spawned those Teen Wolf movies. The Michael J. Fox and the Jason Bateman Teen Wolf movies are sort of homages to I Was a Teenage Werewolf.
The Teenage Werewolf and Teenage Frankenstein both pop up in, what is it called, The Monster Maker or...
I know the one you mean. The one that's about the one where there's a character based on Jack Pierce?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a disgraced...
I think it's called The Monster Maker.
Yeah, he's a disgraced... movie.
Oh, How to
Make
a Monster.
Yes, that's it.
That's AIP from 58.
Was that Whit Bissell?
Yeah, I think Whit Bissell's in Teenage Wolfman.
Teenage Werewolf.
Yeah.
He's the mad scientist. This one was made in 58. How to Make a Monster is the one you're thinking of, with Robert Shane, Inspector Henderson.
Oh, wow.
So I was going to read that on a card of other oddities, but you jumped me again.
Jeez.
You knew that one. How to Make a Monster, 1958.
If it's monster shit, I know it.
What about She-Wolf of London from 1946, which was a Universal production with June Lockhart?
Oh, my God.
Was the werewoman.
Now,
the werewolfess.
That one also seems like one I'm sure I saw it.
You did, with Don Porter.
Yes, I'm sure I saw it. I'm sure I saw it. And but all I can remember really now is in, photos I saw in Monster Magazine.
Okay, what about Hammer Productions? I know you're not a Hammer fan, but in 61, they put out Curse of the Werewolf.
With Oliver Reed.
Which is actually purported to be a good picture.
When was that? What year was that?
61.
61.
Yeah.
I don't know. They did.
Care for that one.
They spent too much time on what made him a werewolf. And it was like ridiculously exaggerated. Mm-hmm. Like there's a wedding, like the king is getting married and they bring in a drunk and the drunk insults the king and the king locks him up into a dungeon. And in the dungeon, he escapes. And all the other madmen escape, and they rape this one girl, and then she's put in a dungeon and beaten for years, and her son's a werewolf. And you go, just have him get fucking bitten by a wolf.
Just get to the throat ripping.
Yeah,
right. That's
yes,
what you want.
Yeah.
You want the werewolf scenes. You don't want all that exposition.
Yeah.
People like that picture, directed by Terrence Fisher, who made a lot of Hammer pictures, a lot of classic Hammer pictures. What if I said to you, Gilbert—
He did pictures about hammers.
What if I asked you if David Janssen, of Fugitive fame, ever played a werewolf?
Holy fuck. David Janssen.
I cheated a little bit because it's a TV movie, and it's called Moon of the Wolf. With Bradford Dillman.
Oh, that title sounds familiar.
And it's about a werewolf in the Louisiana Bayou. And it was directed by Daniel Petrie.
Wow.
How about that?
This one I'm a little stumped
You're
by.
You're a little stumped by that one? Made-for-TV movie in 1972. We'll see what our listeners have on this one.
Oh, they're screaming.
They'll
right
write
now.
In. Now, this one is just to make Paul laugh. There's one from 72 called Dr. Jekyll and Hombre Loco.
I want to watch that right now.
Yeah. I don't know anything about it. Apparently, there's a werewolf in it.
Oh, but you want to know a great urban legend about David Jansen?
Oh, is that he's the son of
Clark Gable.
Yeah, but not real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was a great one.
Yeah, Drew tried to convince me for years that Larry Storch was the brother of, oh, who was it? Some famous comic. Oh, I'm going to screw this up. I'll think of it. But of course they weren't related.
He comes up with some weird ones.
Yeah, he makes them up.
Well, like, he said to me very seriously that Eddie Cantor and Shemp from the Three Stooges were having a homosexual affair.
That's like his one about Clark Gable and who was it?
Oh, Clark Gable
and Andy Devine.
And Andy Devine.
He makes them up.
Which I say, that one is so good, I say it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't need any proof. Clark Gable and Andy Devine fucking each other in the
ass.
And
also the James Comack from Chico and the Man fame was the illegitimate son of Uncle Milty, which is another thing he claims.
Yes,
Drew, if you're listening, we're coming for you.
And he said that, well, this they were friends and they knew each other, but he says that Lon Chaney Jr. and Broderick Crawford would, at the studio, dress up in women's clothes.
Now, that one I believe. That one sounds good.
It would definitely make a good TV movie of the week.
We'll have to do a whole mini episode with Drew about all of these rumors. Yes. We'll just have Drew come in and bullshit
us. They're always disturbing.
Always disturbing and juicy. What about from 1972 also, The Rats Are Coming, The Werewolves Are Here?
The title, I know. I know the title.
And finally, from 1975, and these are just...
Who was in The Rats Are Coming?
I couldn't tell you. I didn't write it down.
Or maybe you just don't want to tell me.
Leave Ullman? No,
we do know that no rats were harmed.
No rats were harmed. Yeah. Maybe some werewolves. In 75, this is the last oddity I have on my card here. The Werewolf of Woodstock. Starring Michael Parks.
Oh,
of then
wow.
Kane Brunson,
yes.
And produced by Dick Clark. Doesn't that...
Yeah.
Kind of blow your mind?
Sure. Woodstock is that kind of place.
I think I saw Michael Parks at one of the last of the...
He was at the Chiller Convention.
Yes, yeah, I saw him.
He passed away.
And he...
Well, we were going to book him on the show, but he wasn't in very good shape.
No.
And then he passed away.
And he looked terrible there.
I'll ask you about this last... I never saw Wolf, the Nicholson picture.
James Spader.
And Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Yeah. Any good? It's mixed reviews at best.
Yeah, they could have shortened it. It's got some parts that are okay, but it's by no stretch a classic.
And what about, did you see the Benicio del Toro remake of The Wolfman?
Yes.
And what's your verdict on that?
That one, okay, well, getting back to, in Wolf, Jack Nicholson's makeup was very much like Henry Hull's
makeup.
Rick
Baker, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
But it was very much like Henry Hull's makeup in Werewolf of London.
Interesting.
Because he had like a toned down, like big sideburns and the teeth.
I never saw it, but it's supposed to be sort of a satire, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a straight werewolf movie.
Yeah. And, you know, it's got parts that are okay. It's not great by any stretch.
And the remake of The Wolfman in 2010?
Okay, that was one I'll give it a generous passable.
Okay. he's a stern critic.
Yeah.
He's harsh.
Yeah. I mean, it won't match up to the original Wolfman, but, you know, it was a nice try.
Okay.
But,
I love the description in IMDb, the plot of the Wolfman. Upon return to homeland, American man is bitten and cursed by a werewolf.
That's it.
That's every
Yes,
pretty much.
Oh, here's my favorite description of a movie. On TV, they had on this Charles Bronson movie, Murphy's Law. And him and Kathleen Wilhoit, I think. Was,
okay.
I started to say that like Johnny Carson.
Ooh, Kathleen Wilhoit.
Hey-oh! And it says... A wrongly accused police detective goes on the run with a rude girl.
That's a great description. Fantastic.
And sure enough, during the movie, she's saying to Bronson, "Hey, dog breath."
So she was rude.
That's rude. Yeah,
so she was very rude.
Lived up to its synopsis. Two wolf movies I kind of like, and they're both strange werewolf movies. They're on the fringe of being werewolf movies. One is Neil Jordan's The Company of Wolves. I don't know if you know that picture.
Yes, that's like kind of like a fairy tale.
It's like a little Red Riding
Hood take.
That's
a great title.
Yeah, I recommend it. With David Warner, who we love, Terrence Stamp, and Angela Lansbury. It's kind of a kinky revisionist take on Red Riding Hood. And I don't know if you've ever seen Albert Finney and Gregory Hines in Wolfen.
Yes.
From the 80s.
Yes.
And which I kind of like.
And I think it was produced by Alan King.
That is correct.
Yes.
And Rupert Hitzig, his former partner.
And
I don't know why I know that.
Because Albert Finney, as he proved in whatever that Julia Roberts movie was.
Eric Brockovich.
He doesn't do the most convincing American accent.
No. He doesn't bother sometimes.
So they wrote into the movie, into Wolfman.
The Jewish werewolf. Wolfman.
The Wolfman. They wrote into it. That they wrote in a line like, "Oh, they used to call me the Limey." He didn't say he was from England, but Limey is a term for England.
To cover the bad accent.
Yes.
Okay.
But I love his accent in Brockovich because there it's like he's a Southern.
I love Albert Finney in anything.
Yeah, because then he's like, "Well, Aaron, I'm sending you on an important assignment." And you go, "Oh, good job."
You're making
Albert.
Him sound like Dub Taylor.
Yes.
So we recommend Wolfen and Company of Wolves. Gilbert says some of those bad werewolf movies aren't so bad. And also, just for personal reasons,
none of them are great.
None of them are good.
None of them are even respectable.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Then we lived up to the title of this episode.
They're all like kind of like, you know, teenage passable, if you like, a dopey movie. And Wolf, by no stretch, great.
And for personal reasons, I will recommend the great Larry Cohen, our former podcast
guest,
directed a comedy called Full Moon High. And I'm only going to recommend it because of the cast. Adam Arkin, Kenneth Mars, Pinky Tuscadero.
Oh, wow.
Pat Morita, Louis Nye, Ed McMahon.
Oh.
Who you just impersonated. Damon Wilson. And, of course, our friend Bob Saget.
See, so, now that I have to see.
Full Moon High, Larry Cohen.
And Larry Cohen, we
got to get him back here. He was a piece of work.
Most of our guests... You know, after like an hour and a half, they start, you know, they get tired of sitting, talking, all that. He would have gone on, if we let him, he would have been talking now.
If we left, he would have kept doing the show. We love Larry. I'm sure he's got many more stories in him, so we'll have him back.
And he's another one of those guys who, when you listen to him, you think, he's wonderfully full of shit.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's great. He's what this podcast is all about. So that, my friend,
terrific.
That wraps, bad werewolf movies. Thank you for your help, Paulie.
Could I add one little tidbit?
Quickly, as we're out of time.
Yes.
We're out of time. We saw the new Halloween this weekend, and I highly recommend it. Much better than it had to be.
Okay.
So check it out and tweet us and let us know what you think.
All right. On your say-so. Gilly, shall you take us out?
Oh, okay. This has been...
Yeah.
Okay.
The face of the screaming werewolf.
What has this been?
Wait. Let me just remember one thing. Even a man who is pure at heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright. This has been Gilbert and Frank's amazing colossal obsession with bad werewolf movies.
Marie is starting to sound a little like Hervé.
Yeah.
Yeah, those obsessions were truly amazing.
I hate that werewolf! Oh, no! Run for your life! Get me my silver bullet!